On this episode, we discuss 65.
Did it make us Smilodon or leave us Dino Sour?
There's no Smilodons in the movie.
Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dancing Dan McCoy. I'm dancing to circus music for some reason.
I was going to say, you dance to circus music. Yeah. That's fine.
And who are you guys?
Well, today I'm going to be all business boy Stuart Wellington.
Oh, no. We're not going to get along then.
You're too silly. Too business.
And I'm reflecting on my regrets, Elliot Kalin. Oh, the things I should have done differently. The doors I should have opened and the ones I should have left closed.
So you're just playing your normal self.
Not that different from normal. That's Elliot when he's in the shower and there's nothing to distract him from the horrible things that he wishes he hadn't done. And usually they're just embarrassing things. They're not that horrible.
What normally distracts you in the shower? Your wiener or like your phone? What are you doing?
Taking pictures of my wiener with my phone. Phone gets wrecked because of the water and the pictures don't come out. Yeah.
No, you got to put it in a Ziploc baggie, idiot. No,
that's why I keep a Polaroid camera in the shower with me, but I can't share those pictures with anybody on the internet because it's a Polaroid, you know?
I mean, I have a Bluetooth speaker that I like listen to music or podcasts in the shower frequently. Like the problem, like I did realize, and I hesitate to reveal this on air lest it encourage people to listen to less of our podcast, which pays our bills. But I found at a certain point that the incessant chatter of the modern world was actually killing me, and so I've tried to cut back and have more sort of silence in my life. But you know,
yeah.
But I do like having the speaker on.
So should we just sit here and not?
Yeah, reflect.
Let's just exist in the moment. Yeah.
You know what? This is your meditation podcast, guys. Everyone who's listening, just get ready for 2 hours of unmitigated silence.
Welcome to the Flophouse Meditation Podcast. Unfortunately, the soothing whale songs could not arrive today. The whales were double booked, so we do have soothing dolphin songs. So just take a breathe in. now just breathe out. Click, 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 click.
Elliot's voice is reaching such high pitches that Zoom is like, stop it.
My recording device has its hands out begging me to stop at the noises. Silence would be good since the movie we're talking about today has very little dialogue in it.
And it features one of the stars of the movie Silence.
Yeah.
A Tyrannosaurus. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let me reset for new listeners who are very confused and probably won't listen again. This is a podcast.
No, not after those dolphin sounds.
Where we watch a movie that is purported to be bad, either by critics or audiences, and then we talk about it. In this case, the movie was 65. Those are the numerals, 6 and 5.
Now, second entry in numbers month.
Yeah.
For the record, this is a movie that Sammy Hagar can drive.
Oh, nice.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And as Stuart points out, of course, we had 80 for Brady, 65, we're going down.
That's right. As we continue numbers month here on the Flophouse, we're doing numbers themed titles.
M4Y.
Yeah.
May.
In this case, we did 65, the movie about Adam Driver meeting dinosaurs.
Meeting is an interesting way to describe it.
Yeah. Before we get into the plot of this one, I remember when the trailer dropped online, my little film circle was very excited. Like, Adam Driver's going to fight dinosaurs. Did you see that trailer yet? It's produced by Sam Raimi.
Now,
but I didn't see the trailer for a little bit. And then all I remember of it was the shot later on where there's a T-Rex right behind Adam D.
Yeah, I got to say that the trailer didn't do a whole lot for me. I mean, as a trailer, like, Adam Driver and dinosaurs sounds appealing.
But it did a lot for you as a friend who helps you move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Am I crazy? At this point in my life, I was more excited by the presence of Adam Driver than I was about the promise of dinosaurs.
Yes. And here's, and this is, I kind of felt the same way. And this is coming from a real hardcore dinosaur kid. I love dinosaurs, always have since I was a child.
No offense, you look like a dude who knows a fuckload about dinosaurs.
Thank you. Hey, wait a minute. I've been binging a podcast called Terrible Lizards that's all about dinosaurs because I feel like I'm not up on the latest science and I really want to be because there's been, especially in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a lot of exciting discoveries in the world of dinosaur paleontology. But I love dinosaurs. I'll never forget seeing Jurassic Park when it came out of theaters. I saw it twice within 12 hours or so because I just wanted – it was so amazing to me to see real-looking dinosaurs that looked alive. And I think I'm just – at this point, we've seen it. Like, we've seen movies with dinosaurs. It's not a special thing anymore. And the way that they could have staked out a special territory is maybe if the dinosaurs in this were accurate to the latest science so they looked different or weird. But instead, they're just kind of your average movie dinosaurs. And they don't – and the dinosaurs in the movie act like – horror monsters? Like, they don't act like animals.
Yeah. Know? Well, it's, I mean, yeah, it's even more beyond them just being like movie dinosaurs. They're like not particularly trying to be any actual dinosaurs that existed. I read a little bit about the production, and apparently it started out a lot more like what you were talking about. We're like, let's make it really accurate. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, you know what, for the type of like, this is their thinking. I don't know if they're right or wrong, but for the type of like stripped down, simple action sci-fi story we're telling, it's better for us to just not care about it. And
I think if they had taken that energy and invested it into like cool scenes or like new things that could happen with the characters.
Yeah.
But it's the movie itself feels so stripped down and so, I mean, spoiler alert, I guess we'll get into this more. It feels so stripped down and so generic and so kind of like blah, you know, like nothing. Mm-hmm. It just feels like a very generic movie with generic dinosaurs as opposed to like something cool and crazy with some new hot dinosaurs that I think are going to sound a little something like this.
Well, and it
they're dolphin dinosaurs.
You know what? Here's the funny thing, Elliot, is like, I'm sure that, you know, I mean, you're recording directly into your Zoom digital recorder.
You know it.
As we explained in the behind the scenes
to pull back
Flophouse
the dinosaur
mini.
Curtain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But your dolphin noises are blowing out the Zoom thing. So whenever you do that, I just
we see you smiling and doing a little dance. Which
your
I'm
head
not
kicks
against.
Back. We see your uvula, you know. But
It's just like in the Company documentary when he's singing Being Alive, and it's such a beautiful song, but you can see straight down his throat because of the angle of the camera, and you just see how much the inside of a human mouth looks like gore-covered viscera, and you're like, oh, this is not the way Sondheim intended these lyrics to be taken, with a sense of horror at what the interior of all humans
no,
looks
he
like.
Did. I have him right here.
I've always
loved puzzles, Dan. And the ultimate puzzle is how do you disassemble a human body? Oh, God. No, Stephen Sondheim, you are the Zodiac Killer.
There he is, the late Stephen Horrible.
I've buried each piece of James Lapine somewhere in your apartment. You'll have to solve a series of clues
For a second,
and riddles.
I thought you were going to say that you buried each piece of James Lipton in my apartment, which also would have been appropriate to the theater, I suppose.
Yeah, somewhat, I guess.
That's why Dan's apartment has a beating of a terrible heart, you know? but you know what movie doesn't have a terrible heart?
Like in that Bruce Springsteen song, there's the beating of a terrible heart. We all hear that terrible heart.
Yep. So
here's the
movie.
Beating of a telltale heart. Everybody has a telltale heart.
So this movie is kind of sold on the promise that we have Adam Driver as a space traveler who lands on
a
Earth.
A space driver. He drives a spaceship.
Yeah.
Who lands on Earth 65
million years ago. Space trucker, in fact.
Million years
no,
ago.
No, I wouldn't call him that. He's more of a space airport shuttle driver because he's just carrying human cargo. Yeah.
And he lands on Earth 65 million years ago, and there's dinosaurs there. And I feel like that's the kind of premise that needs like a poster with like him in like a painting with him in like a ripped spacesuit with like bulging muscles and like very like 70s paperback thriller.
Mm. Yeah.
Which
Maybe
is one direction you could go.
Woman in like in a metal bikini clinging to his leg as he stands on top of a pile of slaughtered dinos.
Yes. Now that's, I mean, I feel like that's one direction they could have gone, or they could have gone like hyper realistic. And I feel like they ended up somewhere kind of in the middle that just doesn't quite work.
Yeah. And the direction they didn't take was to have him face One Direction on a prehistoric Earth. That's right. The world's favorite non-Korean boy band finally against Adam Driver in prehistoric Earth. Now, and here's, I mean, my main issue with this is the movie, it sets itself up for a fall right at the beginning, because a lot of what you just described should be a surprise. We should assume that this movie is set in the future, and then it's a surprise when he lands on prehistoric Earth and we realize he's not from Earth, actually. But the movie, as Stuart will tell us when he does the summary, the movie starts with text that gives that game away.
Okay.
Pretty much.
So we got some production logos, and specifically the final logo is from is that TSG logo where a Ancient Greek guy shoots an arrow through
That's Odysseus proving that he's Odysseus by pulling back the bow. Thank you. Only
ancient
Odysseus.
Greek guy. Yeah, some ancient
I was
Greek
not
guy.
Wrong by saying that.
You were right that he was ancient true. Greek. That's very true.
I was like, yes, he looks like some fucking dude's avatar on Twitter that has fucked up political views.
Yeah, someone who's like, yeah, I'm a Bronze Age pervert. Anyway, so here's my – anyway, everything was better back in the old days when things were terrible, you know.
So that logo –
because, of course, if we went back to that time, I'd be in the leadership position. There's no way that me, a moron, would ever occur to me that I might be a slave in that time period or die for some reason. I, of course, would be a philosopher king or perhaps a warrior king. There's no way. There's no way I would be one of the many teeming thousands or millions who were just nobodies.
Yeah, fuck that guy we made up.
Yeah, this guy we just made up. So this, I bring up the production logo.
Unfortunately, we made him up, but there's a lot of those that guy.
Character.
Yeah. I bring up the production logo because it dissolves into a star field, and we're in outer space. Odysseus
is returning to the stardust from which all humans were formed.
Exactly. We get some a text overlay on the screen that says, "Prior to the advent of mankind, in the infinity of space, other civilizations explored the heavens." And then we find Planet Somaris, which is we only see a little bit of. We see a beach, and we see Adam Driver playing
Somaris.
Mills.
That's all I could think of.
Yeah, it's a planet named after something Frasier might have said. Yeah.
So, Adam Driver plays a character named Mills, and he is spending some time with his sick daughter, Naveen or Naveena, I don't remember. And
very popular name these days. Yeah.
And Naveen's mom, whose character name is Naveen's mom. And it turns out
she's listed in the credits on Wikipedia as Elia. But I don't know. I don't know if she's ever named on screen. Is she?
No, and on the credits just say Naveen's mom.
Oh, so, really? So where is Wikipedia getting this name from? Like the novelization? Call up Alan Dean Foster. Ask him if he invented this name.
I know that there were a couple of very different cuts of this movie that were tested out. Maybe they got it from an alternate version that got in a little more detail.
Should have given us the extra dino cut.
I will say this. That opening text, I love it. I love it in a different movie. The idea that anything that is saying before humans, the other species explored the infinite cosmos, I'm on board. But then when I find out that other species is just like Adam Driver and his family and they hang out on a beach, I'm less interested.
Hanging out on a beach. They're explaining Mills is taking a new job. It requires him to go on an exploratory run for 2 years, but it's going to triple his salary because he needs that money to pay for his sick daughter's life-saving treatment, which right away, guys, I got to say, I'm like, oh, fuck this. Like in the infinite cosmos, again, we have what? Health insurance? Like, what the fuck? healthcare is tied in with our fucking employment again? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, even before that. Well, that's the thing. God created that. Even before the advent of humanity, God created an employer-based health insurance system. Yeah.
And I like a blue collar sci-fi story. I love Aliens. I
keep telling
Stars
you, the movie Blue
Collar
is not a science fiction story. It's set in the 1970s.
Sadly, it's very, very real.
Or like, as I said, Stars My Destination. The premise of the movie basically feels like a mix between like Dead Space and Turok Dinosaur Hunter, kind of.
See, I actually liked this setup because I found it pretty efficient in like getting me on board with these characters without being too like, I mean, like, it was a very obvious, but it didn't feel like as clunky as a lot of movies handle this kind of material.
I would say, finish what you're saying. Then
I was more mad than later on, spoiler alert, like, we learned that this daughter has, like, died during his time in space, you know, and I found that kind of just sort of mean on the behalf of the movie in a weird way.
It is somewhat. I would say, like a ChatGPT written script, it is efficient but soulless.
Yeah.
There is nothing, it is very efficient. It gets the information out of the way, but there was nothing about it where I was like, oh, these characters feel alive. There's something about them that's interesting or unique. Yeah. It just was like.
And the thing is, if you're going to introduce that kind of a thing where it's like, okay, even in this fantasy universe, capitalism is basically crushing us. Like, I feel like if they built into that and added more to that theme throughout the rest of the movie, I would have been like, okay, yeah, I'm into it. But it felt like it was like, just as you said, just like churned out by let's get this out of the way. This makes sense. People will immediately understand.
It looks like someone was selecting from a menu of options for reasons to care about a character. And they're like, oh, okay, sick kid. Great. We'll do it. Yeah.
So, as I said, the next thing we see is sometime later, Mills is sleeping on a spaceship. That spaceship goes through an, as of now, uncharted asteroid field, and he has to do some quick evasive maneuvers. The ship gets damaged, and he has to crash land on a undocumented planet.
You were about to say space planet.
Yes, space planet, which, of course, we will later find out is Earth. And he manages to send out a distress signal at the last minute, giving their coordinates. Ship has crashed in a swamp. He's been injured. Half the ship is missing. The cryo units are damaged. And it seems like he's the only survivor.
Yeah. And so I have to wonder, like, is this the exploratory mission he was talking about earlier? Because, like, this seems like maybe we've jumped ahead and this is a different mission because, like, why is there a bunch of cryo people that he's shuttling somewhere?
I think when he said, well, he is bringing colonists to a to a colony. So I think that's when if they refer to it as an exploratory mission earlier, it's a unfortunately confusing way to describe it. I think, I'm not sure if he is looking for a habitable planet for them or if they know the place they're going to and he's dropping them off. But that's, but this is that mission. I don't think he was like, I'm on this 2-year mission. Anyway, I took another job right after I finished, you know. I think this is supposed to be that mission. If it's not supposed to be that mission, then it's a crazy way to write a movie.
It's extra weird setup. So he tries to record another log or another distress signal, giving an update as to his situation, but he doesn't have the heart. He contemplates suicide, but the memory of his daughter is what keeps him going, staves off that impulse. So he treks through the swamp. We have like some sinister creatures in the background, but nothing particular, just an overwhelming sense of dread. There's dead bodies.
This thing happens where he's like wading through a swamp and there's like some kind of sea serpent that rises, that is like breaking the surface of the water around him, but he doesn't notice and doesn't interact with him.
Perfect for a 70s paperback sci-fi novel cover.
Yep.
He finds one of the, all the other cryo units are damaged. Everybody else seems dead, but he does find one cryo unit with a survivor in it, a young girl that we'll learn is named Koa, who he rescues and takes back to the crash site. But on his way back, he finds a massive footprint that looks just like a Tyrannosaurus Rex's footprint, and we hear dinosaur roars, and then boom, 17 minutes in it. Title, baby, 65 on the screen. And it says with the text, 65 million years ago, a visitor crash landed on Earth. And we see they're on Earth, baby.
You know what?
Which seems like a perfect way to reveal that information if you hadn't already set up that they were not from Earth at the very beginning.
They know. Here's the fucking thing. Like, no movie can have a surprise anymore. The way things are marketed, this thing, like the
Barbarian had a surprise,
the twist was revealed in all of the
good
ads.
Good point. But even then, if on the first release, a lot of that stuff, and I know I'm usually a fan also of like, why are you hiding the monster so much? Like, we're going to see it on the poster. You know, why are you doing this? Why, like with critters, why are you pretending we're not going to see what the critter is? But the rebuttal to my own complaint from that and this is that, like, this movie, if you believe in this movie, it's going to have a life long past the original release. And it's going to be seen by many people who haven't seen the trailer. And You like the fact, I mean, at this point, everyone knows the end of Planet of the Apes. And when they release it on DVD, they have the Statue of Liberty scene on the cover of the DVD. But like, you still, at least when you're making the movie, bring us into that story as if, you know, the story, we don't already know the story, you know.
I'm not arguing against you in a perfect world. I just know the world we live in where this is all going to be revealed. Would I would love more movies where I end up being surprised because everything isn't revealed immediately and I don't know exactly what it is before I walk into the theater. And I say this as a person who likes to read things about movies ahead of time, but I try and skip over anything that I think is actually going to spoil any like plot details. But
I mean,
but I just know that they know that this is going to happen, unfortunately.
In that case, then they should go the other way and like just not worry about a twist. Like at the beginning, just be like, welcome to Gleep Zorp. My name's Grinkagronk, and we're all aliens. Oh, we've got to go, but don't crash land on Earth. Yeah, the monster planet? Why would I go there? It's full of lizard monsters.
Now,
and then,
you make
Oh, shit, we're on the lizard monster planet. Oh, damn it. Oh, God, this is no one ever comes back from here.
Yeah, this
you make
restricted,
a good point,
yeah.
Elliot, which is this movie should have been called Gleep Zorp and Glizzazonk's Big Adventure on the lizard planet.
On the lizard monster planet.
Again, I'd be super into it. So he's exploring his surroundings. He's looking for the back half of the crash shuttle because that has the escape shuttle part of it. And he's hoping that will let him get off this fucking planet. Meanwhile, he finds a bunch of dino bones and claws right by a geyser. And the geyser almost roasts him, but he survives and catalogs this dangerous terrain feature for later use.
Can I?
It's Chekhov's geyser.
Real quick, I got to say, on the subject of geysers.
Okay.
Recently on Law & Order, Stabler had to go undercover because there was somebody using
a
gay dating app. Guys, if you're going to keep interrupting me, I'm going to go longer.
no, we know. We understand how it works.
Stabler, played by Christopher Maloney, is on this show called Law & Order. Okay, are you following me? Okay, so he's
Wait, you're asking questions, but you don't want us to interrupt?
Yep, he is in the show Law & Order where he plays a detective, and his character's name is Stabler, and he has to go undercover on a gay dating app.
This is Christopher Maloney from Wet Hot American Summer.
Yes, and he has to go undercover on a gay dating app because somebody's been using that to commit crimes. So, of course, there's jokes about, like, Christopher Maloney being like, wait, am I a daddy? And it's like, duh, no shit, you're a daddy.
Yeah, you're
a
daddy
Stanley Tucci. So the thing is that that dating app on the show is called Geyser, G-U-Y-S-E-R. And I got to say,
that
is fucking incredible, and that's the reason why writers deserve fair pay.
Thank you. No machine is going to think of something that beautiful. Yeah, Stuart, we shouldn't have interrupted. We didn't know you were doing it. You were being
showing
solidarity.
Think of the imagery that a dating app called Geyser creates in your mind.
Yeah.
Something spouting out hot liquid all over everything.
Yeah. And the tagline's like, you're going to explode.
I don't want that.
You know, like, or like, you know.
Perfect.
Or like, explode on you or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I?
Geyser's a great name for that. All the writers for Law & Order should win like 100 Emmys just for that.
As long as we're talking about things related to the landscape, something a little less jizz-oriented.
Is that possible?
I just wanted to say that.
I mean,
pardon
according
me.
To this
it's
one
part of the natural world, guys.
According to this one James Tiptree story, all of humanity is just basically sperm carriers for a larger organism that reproduces by having us colonize the universe until we encounter specific plants.
That's a really
very
cool
cogent and
it's
relevant.
A great story. It's a great short story.
No, I just wanted to say that I texted Elliot and Stuart this, but I want to say on air, I will give the movie this in terms of like. I saw the trailer and I was like, this is going to look like every other sort of mid-budget, which now in the era of only blockbusters means low budget. It feels like action science fiction movie. It's going to look too like grimy and gritty. It's going to look too digital. And I have to say that this movie, I feel like looks pretty good. Like there are some sort of gray times, but that's connected to like, if it's raining or foggy, like, and then there's some sunny times, too.
My mother always told me legends of the gray times, when the old world died.
Yeah, it's when Liam Neeson fights fucking wolves. Well,
but you get scenes that are...
Liam Neeson's, he's just at his kid's parent-teacher meeting, and some wolves walk in and goes, ugh, another gray time. Okay, just straps the mini bottles to his fingers and goes hog wild on him.
Like, the movie is atmospheric, but you also get things that are, like, full sun. And it seems like, for the most part, what they did was they found real locations. And then they were augmented by digital stuff, obviously. But a lot of it is shot in an actual place rather than just on a soundstage somewhere. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, I will give it credit on the low bar of it clearly showing us a real location. I wish something more interesting was happening in that location.
Yeah, you know? No, sure.
Considering that, again, we're dealing with the premise of space traveler fights dinosaurs.
Okay, so he, Mills sees a reflection of something metallic on a nearby mountain, and his little scanner thing informs him.
He sees his reflection in a snow-covered hill with landslide coming down.
Mm-hmm. And he finds out that that's where the escape shuttle is. It's a mere 15 kilometers away. He's going to have to get his ass over there.
Did it bother you guys at all that they use kilometers in this alien race, or it's just that they translated all of his language into English, so why not?
I find that if I start worrying about that sort of thing, I go insane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair.
Mm-hmm. What would you have preferred, like distancelings or...
I mean, even if they had said like clicks.
Space units. Yeah,
you know, clicks. Like, yeah, I mean, space miles. It is 15 space miles away. 15 smiles away.
But before he can head
and then he says to himself, which of course stands for space miles.
Before he can head to that crash, he gets attacked by a very small dinosaur and he bludgeons it to death, assuming it's some kind of alien or something, I guess.
Well, assuming it was trying to kill.
It was trying to attack. This dinosaur also jumps out of nowhere. It's a very funny moment of a giant dinosaur just leaping out of
He's like, this can of peanuts, let me open one.
A dinosaur.
Also, unfortunately, guys, because Adam Driver bludgeoned that dinosaur, my grandfather doesn't exist. So I only have a little bit of time with you.
A real sound of thunder.
Yeah, the classic story, a sound of bludgeoning.
So Koa, the young girl, the survivor, wakes up and follows him, and they find the carcass of a big dinosaur. Turns out that she doesn't speak the same language as Mills, and so they have some trouble communicating, but he explains that they need to get to this crash site. He makes like a little diorama or display or drawing using red dust or spice or something.
He draws in red dust. A reference, of course, to the Safari movie Red Dust.
And he lies to her, or Dust Devil. He lies to her and says that her family's up there, though he knows full well that her family is most likely dead.
You know what? I shouldn't call Red Dust a safari movie. It takes place in a jungle, but it's not a safari necessarily.
Thank you, Elliot. I'm glad
it's because they're in French Indochina. It's not in Africa. So I apologize. It's a reference to the jungle movie Red Dust.
So they're hiking cross country, trying to avoid the notice of predators. They bond a little over poisonous berries, giant bugs, and they rescue a baby dino from a tar pit only to watch it get torn apart by a bunch of other little dinos.
Yeah.
That was a real sad moment when they're like, we saved it. Ah!
Yeah, I was surprised the movie was that mean because, you know, honestly, like, the thing about this movie is a lot of it feels like it could just be, like, this would be a good movie for older kids, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like, this feels like a young adult adventure. It's very confined. It's, you know, a story between younglings. A kid and a guy.
I mean, it does feel like a movie adaptation of a choose-your-own-adventure novel.
Yeah.
This, like, has all the beats of a, like, a survival horror game.
I think, you know what, this would be a good entry-level, like, if you want to show, like, a 10 or 11-year-old, if you're interested in the idea of, like, science fiction adventure movies, and they haven't seen this kind of story before, and there's nothing particularly scary or too violent or, you know, offensive in it or something like that. Yeah.
So he ends up losing his signal, so he has to climb a tree to get a better signal on the escape craft, only to fall and dislocate his shoulder.
That was foolish of him.
Koa has to help him pop it back into place just in time to start blasting an ambush from a bunch of dinosaurs.
That fall, not to bring in a frame of reference that Stuart doesn't understand, but that fall reminded me of when you're playing a Dungeons & Dragons game, and it's like, oh yeah, I just have to hop across this thing. Okay, roll like a 2 dexterity, and you roll a 1, and it's like, oh, you fell in and broke your neck. Like, it's something that should be a very easy roll, and it destroys you,
Well, he got ants on his hand. He had ants on his hand, and he fell, so he dislocates his shoulder, and these, like, dinosaurs start getting ready to pounce out of the mist. And he's like, okay, step on my hand. And then they pop it back in just in time for him to like, it's like one smooth motion. Pop shoulder back in, gun stock goes to shoulder, and he starts blasting. And I kind of like the like sound of the pulse rifle here, the like sound effect of it.
Sure.
And this is like, this is what the IMDb
it's like
trivia
the first
for
action
this
scene in the movie.
Said something like, this is the only movie where Adam Driver, Marine, has been able to use some of his weapons training. I'm like, it can't be true.
There's no way the Marines didn't teach him how to punch walls like he does in the marriage story. Yeah.
I mean, that level, I'm not going to get into that. Okay.
This is how a Marine wins an argument. Semper Fi, hit the wall.
Okay, so.
There's going to be two hits, me hitting the wall and me, I guess, hitting the floor because I fainted because of the pain of hitting the wall.
Yeah, they're like.
So he blasts these dinos.
The Marine driver, this is where we're going to teach you how to treat a puppet of a little girl as if it was a real little girl. You don't think you're going to use this training, but you will. And when he's on the set of Annette, he was like, all my Marines training is finally coming in handy. I never thought I'd use it, but now I am.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry, Stuart. There's still a little plot. We'll still get through it.
I was kind of worried because we haven't even made a single joke about the fact that, like, do you think there was ever a point where Adam Driver was like, you could shrink me down and I could be a Mini Driver? And they're like, we're not legally allowed to do that. We can't call you Mini Driver. There's a human being called that.
What if you de-aged me into a Baby Driver? Again, we can't do that.
Not allowed to do that.
What if you killed everyone else named Driver, so now I'm the Driver?
Again, that sounds even less legal than even us infringing on the copyrights with an actual murderer. What if you wrote a book about me and I was a paperback driver? That song is called Paperback Writer, Adam Driver. It's not called Paperback Driver. Uh-huh. The song makes more sense to me now because I was like, how can you be a paperback driver? I don't know what it is.
Yeah. He's like, but what about when I hit that wall? When I hit that wall, would you call me Drive Angry? And they're like, well, that's not your name.
No. Well, what if I was real long and full of water and I was the Mississippi Driver? Again, that's river, Mississippi River. It's a different word. It doesn't rhyme. It
doesn't rhyme. It has a lot of the same letters.
It's all the same letters except for one. That's true.
Yeah.
So
then he goes into his tight five about the letter D. You ever notice how the letter D changes the pronunciation of I if you stick it on top of river? What's that all about? Who made those rules? Excuse me, Mr. Alphabet. Can you explain this to me? D has magic powers. Sure, it does.
I'm like, where
anyway,
did he get that? Where did he find that brick wall to stand?
I know, it's amazing.
In a prehistoric world, this is from Adam Driver's Comedy Central roast of the alphabet.
He's wearing a blazer, but he has a T-shirt under it.
It's
surely
amazing.
Not. He's breaking all the rules.
Are those Kirkland brand jeans he's wearing?
Let me do my impression of Q. I'm scared. Will you keep me company? I don't want to start the letter without your help.
Is that Q from Star Trek he's doing?
Is it James Bond's Q?
Here's my impression of X. Guys, I almost never get to start a word. It's not fair.
Versus Sever?
X-23? But she's just a little girl.
She's just a little girl Wolverine.
So speaking of little girls, this one little girl goes running away from the dinosaurs, ends up on a beach with other dinosaurs, and these nasty dino guys are chasing her, and they're about to get her, but at the last minute, that's right, Adam Driver shows up and scares them off, saving her. However, she's a little bit traumatized, so they have to play a little whistle game to calm down.
Yep, because that's when his dad skills come into play. Much as in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, the real superpower is fatherhood.
It's being a dad.
They have a little whistle stop.
So they make camp in a little cave. And while they're sleeping, a little bug crawls into Koa's mouth, and Adam Driver has to blow it up. It's pretty it's kind of gross.
Yeah. It's a little gross. It's not as gross as the similar scene in The Sisters Brothers, which is a grotesque scene about a spider biting him while he's sleeping in the middle of the night.
I haven't seen it. I heard good things.
I haven't seen that.
It's a good movie.
That sounds gross. Where does it bite him?
It bites him, I think, on the face, and his face it blows up really gross. Anyway.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
So, their proximity alarm goes off and they are like, is it another bug crawling into our mouths? But nope, it's a T-Rex. A Tyrannosaurus shows up right behind them in a fairly effective, surprise shot. So effective they had to use it in the trailer. So he turns around and blasts it with his pulse rifle, but is not able
to. We don't want to use it in the trailer, but we have to. It's just too damn effective.
So they're kind of forced deeper into the cave because his pulse rifle is not enough. And don't worry, we're going to see more of this treacherous Tyrannosaur later in the movie. So they're Chekhov's wandering through the caves. Yep, they're wandering through the caves. They eventually get stuck, and they have to start blasting their way through using little grenades. That causes a cave-in and separates them. And Adam Driver has to go back the way he came. Adam Driver, of course, playing the character Mills, not playing himself. That would be weird.
Oh, right, sure.
So
sure.
Mills has to make his way back. He gets jumped by another sneaky dino, and they have a little fight in the dark.
Bugs him.
And he uses the little like sonar feature of his scanner thing to distract it before he blasts it. So he's kind of using all his equipment pretty well here.
Oh yeah, that's the Marine training. You know everything you have can be used as a weapon if you need to. It's very resourceful.
I will say that this is like he has this, you know, all these weapons that
wonderful
he uses.
Toys.
Not
where does he get them?
Well, I mean, like I think oh, that, right, that is a place. Planet. Where this movie falls down, just as the movie Cowboys versus Aliens.
I believe it's just called Cowboys and Aliens.
Cowboys and Aliens, sorry.
You don't know until you watch the movie whether they're going to fight or not. maybe they're just hanging out. Yeah.
Maybe they're just hanging out on a jeep.
Maybe they're dating. Who knows?
Yeah. Much like that fails to deliver it's on like the promise of like, oh man, what if Cowboys and Aliens? What if? Like this doesn't quite deliver on like, I think that the idea is... Okay, obviously.
Obviously, shout out to Fred Van Lente, who wrote the original, I think the original treatment for Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yep.
Obviously,
I bet it was better than the movie. Fred Van Lente's great.
And a regular Adam Driver, just, you know, your run-of-the-mill Adam
not a
Driver
baby,
that
not
you might find in
not,
any Hollywood yeah,
not
today.
Not a dark side Jedi, just a person.
Yeah, he would not fare well against a jungle full of dinos.
You're saying like a Lucky Logan Adam Driver would not fare well against a dinosaur jungle.
But
yeah,
this
probably.
Is one that has
he'd be trying
a bunch
to drive
of,
one, ironically, because he's driving in that movie. Yeah, yep.
This guy's got a bunch of space stuff, you know.
He's got space.
So it's like a predator.
I mean, we're all made of space stuff. Thank you, Carl Sagan.
But no, you know what I'm saying. What I'm trying to get to is like the fun, trashy version of this would lean a lot more on like, okay, how is a spaceman with his like space technology going to take on these, you know, primitive but dangerous and large and all
I
over monsters?
I feel like
monsters.
The trashy version
kind
of this,
like a predator.
Yeah,
or like he has a gun that shoots like circular saw blades or something. So he's like chopping the heads off of dinosaurs.
Awesome.
It'd be cool, right?
It's fucking awesome. Yeah.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is like, yeah, it
like
falls
shoots
victim
a little
to
shuriken
the,
like he's a fucking Eldar guardian.
Yeah.
Neither,
yeah, exactly.
Neither.
I know what you're talking about. Dan, is it clear that I don't know what he's talking about?
Yeah, no, it is. No, but it falls victim to the neither fish nor fowl thing that Stuart's talking about where it's like—
No, they're dinosaurs. They are fowl. They're the ancestors of modern birds. You know, dinosaurs never went extinct,
we'll
Dan.
See,
they just evolved
Elliot.
Into birds.
It's kind of trying to do a serious version of the story, but yes. Spaceman versus dinosaur is inherently a little more— pulpy than that
well,
wants
and,
to be.
And I think the serious version of this, it's weird. Like, they're trying to do an emotionally serious version. Like, he's an emotionally tortured man. When it feels like the serious
he
version of this—
He hits at least one wall.
Yes, he does. That's in his contract. He's got to do it. The serious version of this,
walls.
I feel like, would be one that, like, takes the survival aspect of it that much more seriously. Where it's really a man-against-nature story where you're taking the details seriously. And it doesn't quite do that either.
And then there's also dinosaurs on top of it.
And there's also dinosaurs, yeah. And but you're right. It doesn't – it clearly doesn't want to do the silly, pulpy version of it where he's just like, get extinct, and then like blows a Deinonychus's head off, which would be a crime. Deinonychus is the best dinosaur.
Or but like then, jump kicks a brontosaurus's head right off.
Oh, man, if only that's the Scott Adkins version of this movie.
That would be fucking sick.
It is kind of like a T-ball. Just like a little bulb on the end of it.
He attached that strongly. Yeah. I mean, the hard part is the jump.
It still has a second brain, right? Or a second heart
shit? No, at best, that's a nerve cluster. The hard part is not the knocking off the head. The hard part is the vertical leap to get to that level. He's going to have to jump kick off a tree or something
that. Or you got to get a ramp.
He'd just be in a tree and then sort of jumps down. While kicking,
he's standing on a branch and just does a spin kick and knocks that dino's head clean off. Yeah,
like a Ken style, a Ken Master style hurricane kick.
And then the head flies across the horizon and it lands in the lap of a dinosaur that's just waking up and he looks down and screams at the severed head that landed in his lap.
Or it lands right in a bathtub where like a topless dinosaur is taking a bath with its tits out and I'm like, what the hell?
Okay, that's interesting. You're entering like kind of Howard the Duck more territory with
Again.
This one.
Ducks are Ducks are birds. Neither
ducks are dinosaurs.
Or dinosaurs are mammals, so they shouldn't have.
That's true.
Breasts.
But. No, but these are It's interesting that dinosaurs evolved non milk producing features that look like human breasts.
Well,
purely by convergent evolution. And we're not sure if those are air sacs that allow them to make loud noises for mating purposes, or if there's a defense mechanism. Dinosaur breasts are still hard to understand because they don't fossilize well. It's all soft tissue, so it's very rare that you get them fossilized.
One scientist who's like, I'd like to present my theory of dinosaurs. It's just a bunch of slides that it's pointing to at the conference. They all have big
like crude drawings that he's made. That he's like, I'd like to draw your attention to the only evidence we have.
Now, I'd
they
like
called
to posit
me mad, but.
I'd like to posit a hypothetical situation in which I am having sex with these bosomed dinosaurs. Allow me to click to the next slide.
See, the thing is that they're going to be – I might not be big and strong, but they like me because I'm a little bit goofy.
No, obviously this rendering is not to
laugh.
Scale.
That's why they're into me. and also, you know what? I attend to them. I'm not just about my pleasure.
Yeah,
I'm attending to the dino pleasure.
He's a really good listener.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's clearly got a great imagination. So, I mean, who is this guy? I don't know, but he's amazing.
And I'm putting the work in. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I'm wooing
them.
And he's
working on himself a little bit, too.
I'm not just fucking these dinosaurs. I'm wooing them dino's brain is the largest erogenous zone, and their brains are surprisingly small for the size of their bodies, but it's still a larger erogenous zone than, say, the dino clitoris, which is hard to find even for me, a guy who considers himself a dino feminist, you know?
What street did we drive down? We took a wrong turn along the way. Stuart.
Okay, while Elliot's talking about this, meanwhile, Koa manages to escape to the surface, and she makes a discarded dino talent.
Modern paleontologist is not afraid to go there, guys.
Yeah, you're right. I guess that's true.
No. We should be afraid.
Keep up to date.
Yeah, a lot of great discoveries have been made. Yeah.
So Koa makes a paste of poisonous berries and smears them all over a discarded dino talon. Maybe that'll come up later. And then outside of the caves, this is where we get the second real twist of the movie, guys. Mills checks his scanner, and it reveals a previously mentioned anomaly. The asteroid that ends up wiping out the dinosaurs is on a collision course with Earth. They got to get off this fucking planet. We have a ticking time. We have a ticking clock now, folks. Let's get out of here.
They didn't just land on Earth 65 million years ago. They landed the day before the dinosaurs were wiped out.
That is bad luck.
It's bad timing. Yeah. That's
although
very
I guess
luck.
It makes sense because that's why there's the asteroid field before.
Yes.
I
think they would say that's why they crashed in the first place is because of the asteroids. But the fact that they were passing by Earth a couple days before the life form that had ruled the planet for over 100 million years is about to be wiped out, leaving space for a little stinker known as humanity to evolve. It's just good to... the only way I would have liked it more, and maybe they are implying this but not, is if it was their crash that sent the asteroid towards the Earth and that they're like... It bounced off their spaceship towards the planet and they're like, oopsie, sorry.
That would be zany. What a mix-up.
It's humanity's time to shine. So Koa and Mills are reunited.
I am glad of one thing. Okay. That I was worried that it was going to be like, oh no, the dinosaurs go extinct. Are they going to reveal that Adam Driver and Koa are the ancestors of all of humanity in some kind of like forced Adam and Eve situation? I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, they don't do that, which is great.
They don't do that.
Not only would that really screw with the fossil record, but it would be, it's dumb. We've seen it before. You know, thank you for not doing that.
I want to say though that if it was the movie you're talking about and they hit the asteroid into the Earth, like, I love how that flips the whole thing where the dinos have a legit gripe against Adam Driver.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
who has
true. They have a reason to
their
attack him.
Entire species.
That he doomed them and is trying to just dip out.
Oops, sorry, guys.
My bad.
It is the ultimate hit and run. Universal hit and run. He's just going to leave a note that's like, sorry, I destroyed your planet for a little bit. Let's
classic.
Get our lawyers in touch.
Rename the movie Bad Driver.
Now, here's the better movie. Here's the movie I want to see of that. They catch him. He gets taken to dino court and put on trial for war crimes. They sentence him to 65 million years in jail. And then humanity evolves and Adam Driver emerges from his cryo prison 65 million years later. That's why humanity has this warlike gene inside of us that caused us to fight our neighbors is because the guy who taught us all that destroyed the dinosaurs first, and he's gone insane from his time in cryo jail for 65 million years.
Okay,
anyway,
well,
there's
you TM that shit, right? Okay, so
yeah, transcendental meditate it. I will.
So they reunite. Koa kills a couple little baby dinos, then saves Mills from some quicksand. They climb up the mountain. They find the crash. The escape vessel is intact and working. They have the coordinates to connect with the rescue vessel, but then Koa realizes Mills had lied to her about her family being alive and at the crash site. So he, like, talks about his daughter or some shit, and everything's fine, and they're okay.
And by the way, he talks about his daughter, and I tweeted about this, and this was the inspiration for the tweet. Yeah, you can go back and be like, oh, now I know why.
Yeah.
In movies where—
yeah, all the clues were there, Mr. Policeman.
In movies where there's, like, a language barrier, I'm always annoyed at how at the moment that something really emotional and important needs to be imparted, seemingly that problem falls away. Like, seemingly the message gets across.
Dan, there's one language we all speak, the language of the human
Esperanto.
Heart. And Esperanto, yeah, the universal language. She saw the footage of Adam Driver's daughter that he keeps on his little, like, hologram cards that look for the life of me like the little lenticular viewer that used to come with Secret Wars superhero action figures.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. And you like those trading cards that had like dinosaurs wearing clothes and shit. Did you ever get those?
Yes, yeah.
What or Jesus called? Following you around the room.
Exactly. Please tell him to stop. I'm not going to convert. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm not need to
buying
be healed.
Anything. I'm not going to. I'm just here.
When depending on the way you look, when you go back and forth, it looks like his eyes are rolling the whole time. Yeah. You're like, calm down, buddy.
Yeah, sarcastic. Yeah, Jesus.
We're doing
just
the best
we
can.
Yeah. We're not all God's son, okay? And even you kind of fucked it up a little bit when you were doing that job. So the that you can pop those little things into the video toaster like she does and see the hologram projections. So maybe she sees his emotions and kind of guesses, oh, he must be talking about this girl.
No,
but you're
I
right.
Know. It's just a thing that happens in movies that bothers me, though, where it's just like, well, I guess everyone understands everyone now.
But
like, I have no idea what she thinks he's actually saying.
She thinks he's going, I'm so hungry. Can we just go home? I need a sandwich.
Yeah, it's like when you bonk someone on the head with a coconut. You're like, you could have killed him. That's what Judd Apatow texted me. He's like, you could kill someone if you hit him in the head with a coconut.
No, it's
also a war crime.
It's something that bothers me, and it shows you – but it's true, but it shows you the power of storytelling is that if the story was told well and it was more interesting, you wouldn't notice. The same way that we mentioned Planet of the Apes earlier – Charlton Heston must be the biggest moron in the world to not notice he's on Earth when every ape speaks perfect English to him. And it never occurs to him that, oh, yeah, these aliens on this other planet where apes evolved, they also evolved English, the same language I speak. Like, that should tip him off. But the movie's so
good.
Every
single, dialectic nuance. It's exactly the same.
They use the same slang. Like, but the movie just, like, is so well told that you have to watch it a couple times before that even really bothers you. To a certain extent, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas that stuff.
Guys,
pops
we are
right
in
out.
The home fucking stretch.
Yeah, okay.
So they strap in. Their shuttle gets hit by a chunk of asteroid, so they slide down a mountain. Uh oh.
Now they're upside down. Yeah.
They're upside down, and unfortunately, they also slide right into the path of an angry T-Rex. Wait a minute. Two T-Rexes? There's two T-Rexes. Adam Driver's like,
twins?
I'm going to start blasting them.
Yeah,
turns
the
out
T stands for twin. Twin Rexes.
His little blaster's out of ammo, so he has to lead them on a little chase.
And the
T-Rexes
are like, you did this. This is your fault. This is all because of you.
They trap him under a piece of wreckage, and things are looking grim.
Tyrannosaurus wreckage.
So Koa uses the little hologram player and plays a little hologram of his daughter to kind of lift his spirits and also to distract those dinos because one of them tries to bite his daughter hologram, and he's like, fuck this. And his gun suddenly starts to work, and he fucking blasts one in the dome and kills it immediately.
It is
like,
funny. It is
perfect
funny that-
shot.
We're familiar from movies when a character sees a loved one threatened and gets berserker strength, but the idea that their gun was also like, we got to protect that girl.
You don't understand future guns, Elliot. Maybe they're powered by rage.
And it's not the future, Stuart. It's 65 million years ago. These are past guns, but maybe they are powered by rage. Yeah.
Okay. So the other T-Rex is mad about this whole thing, so it goes and attacks the shuttle, putting it in the perfect position to launch. Thank you.
Thank you,
and then Adam
T-Rex.
Driver blasted a whole bunch and it collapsed and we're like, oh man, the nightmare's over. No.
Way to thank that T-Rex for saving you by blasting it to death. Come on, Adam Driver.
And no, 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 nightmare's not over because a third T-Rex shows up and you know which one it is. That's right. It's the sassy one that already has gotten shot in the face and does not like him. So he tries to lead it away so that Koa can escape.
That T-Rex shows up. Hey, buddies, I'm ready to join you for our picnic. And what the? They're dead. Fuck? Who did this? And he sees Adam Driver and goes, so it's you. You asshole, you're back. And Adam Driver goes, feats don't fail me now.
So he goes running away. Dino chases him. And Adam Driver's like, haha, remember that geyser from earlier? You're about to get a faceful. Unfortunately, this T-Rex is way too smart for him and stops short before getting its face roasted off.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's curtains for Mills. Unfortunately for the dino, Koa runs up and stabs it right in the eyeball. Perfect shot, no scope, right in the eyeball. And it starts thrashing around right in the path of a geyser and gets its face melted off. Gross.
Yeah.
They get on the shuttle. Like they fly away. What?
There was this. Maybe you guys are familiar with the Dinosaur Attacks trading card series, which was an '80s kind of sequel to Mars Attacks, where they were like, "Let's do the same thing with dinosaurs." It super freaked me out when I was a kid. It's so over the top, gory. And there's one where the dinosaurs are being sucked back in time, and their skin is being pulled off of them. And that's what this reminded me of. Yeah,
nice.
That's pretty cool. So yeah,
that
his
series,
face
by the
gets
way,
all
ends
ripped
with
off.
The scientist who saved the world going to hell for some reason, which is ruled by a satanic dinosaur. It doesn't really make any sense, but it's a trading card series.
Oh man, I wonder what pleasurable delights Satan dinosaur can offer me.
Yeah. Pinsaurus is down there. Yeah.
So so they get back onto the shuttle and they fly away and they fly close enough to that asteroid to fucking wave at it as they fly past.
they go ace those suckers. Let's get out of here.
So they're up in the sky, and then the credits roll over footage of a scorched earth, which is followed by an ice age, followed by regrowth and civilization, and then presumably John Hammond getting the idea for a sick-ass theme park.
Yeah, I when we saw the movie end with this sort of, like, the earth, changing a new species, building... Humans.
There's no surprise. It's Earth.
Well,
we know who
like evolution. Like I, yeah. When we see that happening, I really wanted it to end with like some human finding the remains of
man,
his
animal,
ship,
rat brains,
and being like, "What the hell is this?"
like that great Star Wars legend story comic where Indiana Jones finds the Millennium Falcon crashed in South America and Han Solo's skeleton is inside of it. And he's like, you don't know you're meeting yourself, Indy. But anyway.
That's pretty cool. So wait, did they take Han Solo after he died and put him in the Millennium Falcon
out? This is no longer canon. This was written, this was published before the newer movies. So at this point.
But I bet it could still work.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like a Viking funeral. They stuck his body back in the Millennium Falcon and then set it on fire.
They're like,
sorry,
Lando, you never get this ship.
That was my ship.
That would be very funny.
And as we know, there is fire in Star Wars space. We see a Star Destroyer on fire in Return of the Jedi, right? So they could give him a Viking funeral. I think
there's that stormtrooper who just lit a cigarette while he was standing outside in outer space.
Okay, let's. Yeah.
And in the story, I believe Indy is investigating a Yeti type creature, and that turns out to be Chewbacca, who's just been living in the jungles there. If I'm remembering the story correctly.
No, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah, so like that. Do you want to go talk about that whole story, or is
sure?
That
anyway,
it?
So exterior jungle.
We're scripting it out.
No, you. Yeah.
What do we do now, Dan?
This is when we do final judgments.
Cool.
Where they talk about this is a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie we kind of like. Why don't you guys go first this time? One of you. What do you think?
Okay, it feels like I'm about to step on a Dan landmine or a Dan mine. So I would say I wish that this movie had gone a little bit more in either direction. Like I wish it was a little bit either grittier or ideally a little like crazier and pulpier. Like it feels kind of joyless. And I understand the motivation and I understand like the idea of like a serious portrayal of this, but like I kind of wish that there'd been maybe like a voiceover or a narration or some kind of like humor to it. I don't know. Like I feel like it could have been, I mean, it's because it's a movie about a spaceman blasting dinos. Like I would like it to be I ideally would like it to be a little more fun.
I think I'm going to jump on you about with that, or jump on your idea. I'm not going to jump on you. That would be disrespectful. It would be it'd be like a little monkey from Raiders of the Lost Ark just being on you. Or we'd eventually, if I jumped
save
on you,
me from dates.
I guess basically turn into Master Blaster at that point.
Daddy, it could technically be hopping on Pop.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I mean, it would be not hop on Pop so much as pop on hop. Pop on, I guess. Anyway, you guys, are you ready for that prequel they announced that tells the story about Pop from Hop on Pop before he became a Pop? What was he like when he was a bachelor?
No. Yeah.
when he can't stop popping.
You know, once you pop, you can't stop. That's the thing. So
it's law.
I'm going to join Stuart. I'm going to write a concurring opinion to Stuart's opinion in the case of Flophouse V65, where okay. I wish the movie had been more fun, or I wish the movie had been more intense. I wish it had been more thrilling. I just wish the movie had been more on an emotional level in terms of the story. I wish that the movie had, it feels like this is the most, it feels basic. It feels like the most normcore basic bitch way to tell the story. And I wish they had just taken some more chances, either by making it more extreme or more fun or anything like that, you know?
Yep.
I am going to write the dissent for this, but I'm going to be clear, it is not a scathing dissent. It is a mild dissent.
Okay.
I kind of like it, but only sort of on the sliding Flophouse scale of movies that are so much more poorly made or ill-conceived. I will define what I like about this movie sort of mostly in opposition to things I don't like about a lot of modern blockbusters. Like, I appreciate that in contrast to a lot of modern blockbusters, this felt very sort of confined for a fantastic story. It was human scaled. I understood the emotions and the wants of everyone. You know, like it, like I said, a lot of it took place in real locations that got juiced by special effects rather than just sort of a layer of digital sludge over
Robert
everything.
Rodriguez style, make it in your basement, all on green screen.
Yeah, and, you know, I like that they got
place in the quantum realm.
A pair of good performers. Adam Driver, obviously very good. I also really thought that the young actress who played the Koa, was it?
Ariana Greenblatt, that's her name.
Yeah,
she was really good.
She played young Gamora in Infinity War. So she's actually been around in big movies for a while now.
She specializes in young characters. But for how long? Only time will tell.
Probably not that much. time will
tell. The way Hollywood literally treats actresses, you're right, Dan. In a couple years, she'll be playing moms, and then it'll be 80 for Brady for her.
Yeah, but, you know, it's these people who made this movie, the writing-directing team, were the writers with John Krasinski on A Quiet Place. That was their sort of like breakthrough into bigger movies before
that.
So they
made bad movies before.
Yeah, I'm not wild about A Quiet Place, but I think
you're wild about Harry.
A skillfully,
and Harry in turn is wild about you.
I don't love it. It is a skillfully made kind of starter level horror movie, I say with probably annoying condescension. But I like that they, it seems like they came up in smaller horror movies, and I feel like they still have that sort of instinct of, like, let's keep it tight. But that all said, it is a little more boring and basic than it should be. And, you know, for a 90-minute movie, I shouldn't get as, like, sleepy watching it as I do. But I did appreciate that it had qualities.
Let's say that. I don't think that this is a quality-free movie.
Yeah.
No, but I think it is. It is a. It's not the highest recommendation when most of what you liked about it is in opposition to things that
you don't
like about other movies.
Yeah,
that's what I said. But mild dissent.
Yeah, I mean, this is a. I don't think it's a. I think this is a. I'm gonna go back to a frequent Flophouse rating and say, if you're sick and this starts playing on TV in the afternoon, go ahead and watch it. You know, why not? But it's not. You're not gonna remember much about it afterwards, and not just because you're sick.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would fall into the, if we're using our categories, it would be like the mildest of bad bads for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think it doesn't rise the level of bad bad for me. It's like it doesn't fit quite into our criteria because it's. But again, that's a mark against it is that like it just doesn't generate enough feeling in me to even want to give it that rating. You know, it just kind of is. And you know what? maybe we should all just try to be, you know?
Yeah, live in the moment.
Yeah, be if like that 65. Moment is
65 million years ago.
You know how you can live in the moment and generate feeling? Microdosing. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver. Microdose Gummies are not
you
made
were,
of liver.
Dan, you I want to make such- it- You're being very so masterful. Clear. I was so impressed, and then you tripped up over that one word. But yeah. Thank you for making clear that microdose gummies are not made out of liver.
I think that they might even be vegan. Don't quote me on that. Look it up instead. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And I don't think it's any secret that we're living through stressful times. Like I said earlier, I think during this show, if not the other one we recorded, I've been unplugging sometimes just to, you know, quiet the noise. And another thing that helps feel a little more chill, a little more optimistic about everything is a microdose gummy from Lumi Labs. And Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FLOP to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show's description. But again, that is microdose.com, code FLOP.
Have you ever fantasized about being trapped in a situation with a prehistoric predator? Well, you can just get a cat for your home. See, we're also sponsored by Smalls, and Smalls makes delicious cat food for those voracious predators in your house. And Smalls is protein-packed cat food made from preservative-free ingredients, just like the stuff that you would find in your refrigerator, if your refrigerator has fresh stuff, and it's delivered right to your door. Smalls works with cat nutritionists to create recipes that are exactly what your little guy craves and what their body needs. Thing is, my cats, they're annoying. I love them, though. I will take a million bullets for them. I will be set on fire, but they are also annoying. And I want to try and keep them as alive and healthy as possible. And Smalls is a great way to do that. 78% of cat owners reported their cats had a shinier and softer fur after switching to Smalls, and 90% reported overall health improvements. Why don't you take care of that beautiful little kitty cat in your home? Higher quality ingredients mean a healthier and happier life for your kitty. So head to smalls.com/flop and use promo code FLOP at checkout for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping. That's the best offer you're going to find, but you have to use our code FLOP for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's right. That's promo code FLOP for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping.
Is there anything else anyone wants to plug before we move on?
See, the thing is, the WGA is on strike right now.
Oh, that's true.
And Elliot has something you would like to say about it.
That's very true. The WGA is on strike for a number of different specific reasons. The WGA, of course, is the Writers Guild of America.
If I was a fool, okay, can you give me a quick summary of those?
Sure. The Writers Guild of America, the union that Dan and I both belong to as members, me as a very active member, Dan as more of a, you know, give along, go along kind of, get along kind of guy. He'll take out his badge every now and then. We are on strike right now for a few different reasons. One is, and they all come down to basically different ways that the studios that employ us, that buy our product, that distribute our product, different ways that they are trying to either minimize the amount of writers that they can pay, minimize the amount of money they can pay those writers, and also try to eliminate the writers entirely. Here are the main things that we're trying to go after. One is something called mini rooms, where an entire television season is broken and basically written by a small group of writers who then are often not involved in the production of the show, are paid very little for that amount of time. It's a short time period, and are they often don't get the kinds of residual payments that they deserve for the work on that series. What are residual payments? It should be that every time someone who owns a product that we have created gets money from it, that we should also get a little bit of that money. It's what sustains us between jobs. It's what makes writing an actual career that you can live off of and not a series of gigs that you're lucky to get every now and then and you have to take vacation days off of your day job to do them.
And if the bosses are making money off of your work, you should be benefiting from your work.
Exactly. Because the bosses didn't create our work. We created that work. They are merely exploiting our abilities, our labor, our imaginations. And
it's almost like the bosses need you more than you need the bosses.
Thank you, Stuart. That's a very good point. Unfortunately, the new streaming world that we exist in has taken those residual amounts, which I'll be very honest, residuals are often what get me from you know, month to month or sometimes year to year when work is not there. I've been receiving residuals recently from SAG-AFTRA for a little bit of voiceover work I did in Housebroken in the first season, and it has really helped to patch up the holes in my finances right now, which I really appreciate. They are necessary, and it is not a matter of getting paid more than once for the same work. It is a matter of, as Stuart said, when our bosses make money off our work, we should make money off our work. Unfortunately, in the streaming world, those residuals have sunk to next to nothing, in some cases nothing, and they are not transparent about how much money they're making off of our work or how many people watch it even. And so it's hard to know what we're owed. And so that's the second big thing. The third big, and these are just the television writers are on strike for. Feature film writers are on strike also, and they have a slightly different set of issues, but related. They're all related to companies trying to weasel out of paying us what we're owed and what we deserve. The third thing, artificial intelligence, it's coming for everybody. It's coming for everyone's job, basically. And there is a vision that studio executives have of a world where computers write scripts and maybe they hire a person to do a little bit of tweaking on it to make it not feel like a computer wrote it. That's a world that we are trying to eliminate. The fact is, the machines are rising right now, and we've got to do what we can to make sure that creative work is done by humans. We are entering possibly a kind of brave dystopian world where not a brave, a cowardly dystopian world in which mainstream culture is just a matter of things being regurgitated based on computer algorithms, based on things that have already been made. And the fact is, you cannot make a thing without human imagination being involved. At this point in history, at
you
this
can't
point
get a, you certainly can't get a new thing. You can only get variations on something you've already had before.
If someone showed, there's this video that's been going around where it's like The Lord of the Rings in the style of Wes Anderson, and it's like, the person who used, I'm sure, multiple AI programs to make it, to put it together, did a very good job. It looks really good, and it's, you know, it's a funny idea. That is a book written by a person, put in the visual style of a director who's a person, then cast with the images of actors who are only famous or beloved to us because they are people, because they have given us imaginative performances. It is an idea for that mashup that was come up with by a person, and the person had to use the program to make it. So even something like that, which is essentially a fan work that uses AI, still relies on so much of the work of human beings and cannot be done entirely by computers. So why are we striking? It is, at a basic point, to maintain the position of human beings in our creative culture and to maintain that creative work as work that people can afford to do for a living. And so you're like, yeah, you've made such a great case. This is amazing. I wasn't on board before. Before I was a big fan of David Zaslav. I was like, why are they booing him at Boston University? He's a great guy.
Changing it to Max is a good idea.
I want HBO to be devalued from a place that special TV shows and movies get made into just another place that can watch the people who do house flipping and stuff like that, where they flip more houses. Anyway, which is not to say anything wrong against our fellow workers in the reality TV or unscripted nonfiction television production area. They are also writers, and they deserve to be covered in the guild. But that is to say, what can you do? Well, a lot of people want to come on the picket line and strike with us. That's great, and you're welcome to do so. But what might be even more helpful at this point is if you could go to entertainmentcommunity.org and donate to the Entertainment Community Fund. It used to be called the Actors Fund. Now it's the Entertainment Community Fund. That's at entertainmentcommunity.org. Donate and choose to donate to designate that gift for supporting film and television professionals. That money will go not just to – it goes to anyone in the entertainment community who will need money right now. And that's not just writers. That's also support staff. That's technical crew. That's everybody whose work is suffering because the AMPTP, the American Motion Picture and Television Producers or whatever it's called, the Association of I don't remember what it's called. Anyway, the AMPTP, because they will not pay writers what they deserve and they will not give us the respect and credit for having built the business that they now make a lot of money off of. They could end this tomorrow, but they aren't. And so if you can go to that place and help the people who will be suffering as a result, again, not just writers, but writer's assistants, script supervisors, people on crew, actors, anyone in the entertainment community, this will help. They can reach out to that fund for help should they need it to get through this strike period.
And as you've brought this up, I just want to mention a message from Leslie in Colorado who said, I just donated to the Entertainment Community Fund and almost forgot that my company matches charitable donations one-to-one. Luckily, I did remember before donating, so I doubled the donation with their portion. Thought I'd bring it up in case other people have companies that do the same. More money from the man to help stick it to the man. So
that's
just
great.
Wanted to
thank you
that
very much. What was her name again?
Leslie.
Thank you for that, Leslie. Or his, Leslie, I don't know what your...
Yep.
What
or there.
Your, or there. I don't know what your gender is, but I'm saying thank you. Why are you getting mad at me when I'm saying thank you? Oh, Leslie, let's patch this up. We'll talk about it off mic.
Elliot, but I think you're projecting.
Please take a... Yeah, because I'm in the movies. It's a movie projector. Please take a note from Leslie, and if you want to support, if you want to show your support, if you want to contribute, this is a good way to do it. Doesn't have to be a lot of money. Any amount is helpful. That's money that people in the entertainment industry who will most likely have trouble paying their bills during this time can turn to. So thank you very much for doing so. And thank you so much for, I feel like this, what's different between, one of the things that's different between this and the last time the Writers Guild was on strike is that the public at large feels like it's on our side. The other unions are on our side, which is enormous. But it feels like everyone I know like gets it to a certain extent and supports us.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate it. We really appreciate that the public understands this is a battle between workers and bosses, and the bosses can afford to take care of the workers, and they're refusing to, and people are taking the side of the workers, which is us. And I feel like everyone in every industry is going to have to start making these types of stands. And so to have your support now means a lot to us, and you can count on our support later on when you have to do the same.
You probably already have a favorite animal. Maybe it's a powerful apex predator like the tiger or a cute and cuddly panda. And those are great, but have you considered something a little more unconventional?
Could I perhaps interest you in the Greenland shark, which can live for nearly 400 years? Or maybe the jewel wasp, who performs brain surgery on cockroaches to control their minds?
On Just the Zoo of Us, we review animals by giving them ratings out of 10 in the categories of effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics. Listen with friends and family of all ages to find your new favorite animal with Just the Zoo of Us on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Jordan Cruciola, the host of Feeling Seen, where we talk about the movie characters that make us feel seen.
And I'm the show's producer, Marissa. Jordan, you've interviewed so many directors, actors, writers, film critics, and I like to play this little game where I take a sip of coffee every time someone says, "That's such a great question."
"That's such a fabulous question."
Or they tell you how smart you are.
"I think that you are rather brilliant."
And of course, the big one is,
When they cry unexpectedly.
Yes, yes.
Jordan, I don't want to cry on your podcast.
I wasn't expecting to cry.
I mean, it makes me kind of want to cry.
Feeling Seen comes out every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Listen already. What are you waiting for?
Jordan, that's such a great question.
Let's move on to letters from listeners. This letter begins thusly and then continues, as I will say.
Wow. Thank Victor, you for being so comprehensive. I appreciate that.
Yes. Victor E. Bull here. While listening to the delightful Numania mini, I was delighted to hear my brother in Buffalo College mascots, Petey the Griffin of Canisius College, mentioned. This name drop was exciting both as a mascot and as a proud Buffalonian. I have one question for you all. If you could be any mascot, real or fictional, who would you choose to be? Thanks for many years and hours of wonderful programming. Victor E. Bull, really David, last name withheld. So, you know, look, I'm going to say, like, everyone's got Gritty fever. I can't say that I could be Gritty. Gritty has a certain crazed party energy.
You could never pull it off. No.
That I couldn't. But you, no. But his cousin, the Philly Fanatic, I think, has a whimsical, goofy quality that I enjoy and I'm drawn to. I think that would be
now the idea that they're cousins. I'm just imagining the Philly Fanatic being woken up in the middle of the night and Gritty asking him to help him hide a gun somewhere in his house. Just hold on to this. Hold on to this for a little bit.
Put it in your nose.
They can't look in there without a warrant.
Oh man, Fudgy the Whale is really cool.
How's that a Is that a mascot?
It's kind of a mascot. It's a mascot for an ice cream company.
Yeah.
You know?
Green Giant has those big ass thighs. I like that.
So I didn't know we could do corporate mascots.
Yeah, if we could do corporate mascots.
Sports mascots.
I do like, mostly because Thurl Ravenscroft voices, I like Tony the Tiger. He seems enthusiastic. Yeah. And he gets to actually enjoy the product rather than having it, you know, cruelly taken from him.
Yeah,
like the Trix Rabbit or the other number of
Lucky or I've always assumed that Tony the Tiger was gay too. So that's an LGBTQ icon right there that you're.
Yeah, I think it's the ascot that you're.
Yeah,
that's pointing
probably
to.
It.
And there's also I feel like there's a certain Elliot's
going to say the fucking Cookie Crisp cop or some shit. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, dude?
I want distribution of those Cookie Crisps to all. You know, I mean. With that dog and everything? No, thank you. When I was thinking of sports mascots, I was thinking, so there's a Twilight Zone episode about a robot that plays baseball, and there's a team called the Hoboken Zephyrs, and I always really loved that name, and I imagine their mascot was like some kind of personification of the wind, and so I was going to say that. But if it can be a corporate mascot, then—
Yeah, can I do that little chuck wagon from the chuck wagon dog food where they are running away from—
Oh, you know who I'd like to be? The LaCroix Dragon.
Oh, yeah, cool. Sure. Yeah.
Can I be the Pringles guy? Just the guy on the Pringles can?
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
He's nasty.
He is nasty.
Look at his face. You know.
Yeah, look at him. But he's also just a hardworking immigrant, I assume.
This is also from a David or a Dave in this case. These are the Daves I know.
Sing
and one
the song.
Of them, these are the Daves I know. This is from Dave, last name withheld, who writes, "Dear Floppers, I recently had a dream where I was hanging out with Dan and Stu. My brain must have admitted Elliot because he lives in L.A., although it seemed okay with the fact that I'm in North Carolina. But anyway.
East Coast.
Also present was Cameron Diaz. It was obvious Ms. Diaz was an old friend of theirs. Because
she lives
she was
in L.A. too, I think, though. So this, hold on a second.
I feel like she's probably bi-coastal.
Yeah, that's true.
It was obvious Ms. Diaz was an old friend of theirs because she was about to tell an embarrassing story. One where Dan and Stu are doing the whole, oh no, don't you dare tell this thing, while smiling because they know it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just before the story was told, my cat jumped on my bed to wake me up because it was 8:10 and way past 8 a.m. kibble time. My question is, what are the things in art that you're most disappointed in not being able to consume? Whether it's a show being unexpectedly canceled, a screenplay that never got filmed, music collaboration that was rumored but didn't happen, etc. Thanks for all the laughs over the years. Dave, last name withheld.
I'm sure
I'll think of more as we talk, but the one that first sprung to mind was something that has been mentioned on this show before, and I agree with Elliot that it probably wouldn't actually have been that great. But the Billy Wilder Marx Brothers movie, A Day at the United Nations, sounds so tantalizing to me. I can't even imagine what it would be. And of course, I just want another Marx Brothers movie in the world. So that's one that springs to mind.
That's one that definitely came to my mind too, but I discarded it for that reason, is that I think there's comedy styles I don't think would have meshed particularly well.
Yeah.
And the only joke that Billy Wilder, as far as I know, ever like said that Heath was thinking of for an interview talking about it was that like the Marx Brothers mix up the signs in for all the countries. So like the Egyptian delegate says Israel in front of him, and like the Israeli delegate has, you know, another has an Arab country in front. And I'm like, well, that's not that funny a joke. Like, that's
not really.
That's not really very good.
Prank.
But there is a movie that they started shooting and never finished that I wish they had finished, which was Joseph von Sternberg was directing an adaptation of I, Claudius, starring Charles Laughton as Claudius. And there's very little footage that exists of it. And apparently Laughton was having a very hard time with his performance, and he and Sternberg didn't work well together. But I think it would have been so interesting to see how they would handle that story, which is such a like sadistic sexual element in it, in a 1930s movie. And to see it in Joseph von Sternberg style, which like, if there's any movie that would have given me hope for it, is it's his movie, The Scarlet Empress, which is such a like beautifully like Baroque, strange movie for a Hollywood studio to make. But there's only a little bit of footage. The rest of it doesn't exist. But I had some other things I want to mention too, which is one, any of Franz Kafka's books, he didn't finish any of them. And The Castle literally ends mid-sentence. So you don't even know where the scene is going. And I would have loved to have known where he was going to go with these things. And on the same level, back in the 90s, Marvel had this insert that was in a bunch of their comics where they were hyping new projects they had coming up. And one was a Sauron prestige format series. And I was like, as a young person, I always loved the character Sauron. He's a big Pteranodon man. And I was like, wait a minute. What possible story would justify like a prestige format series? Prestige format for non-comic book readers would mean like instead of being stapled in the back, it would be like perfect bound. It would probably be on like better cover and paper stock and like cost a little more. And it's like, what possible story about Sauron would justify this? But it, as far as I know, I've never heard any detail about what that might have been. And I wonder if it was literally just them being like, we got to fill out this insert with other things that we might have someday. So make something up. But I've always wondered what that was. Stuart?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there's been so many like TV shows that have been canceled that I liked. But I feel like the project that I would be the most excited about, even though I have no idea if it would be any good, is the Guillermo del Toro Mountains of Madness movie project that he wanted to do. I have no idea how far they even got. Like,
I mean, there's a script. Tom Cruise was attached to it, but
there's some test footage. Did you see the?
I haven't seen the test footage, but I did see. I did see some of the maquettes of the like the giant penguins that they made for it. That looked really cool.
I love giant penguins.
Sure, yeah. And if you want giant penguins, that's the story for you. There's only really pretty much just two stories for you, that and with the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym. That's about it.
Yeah.
I think that there's a number of things. There's a lot of like lost films as well. Many, you know, a huge vast swath of silent films.
Especially
don't exist
with
anymore.
The current streaming situation.
No, that's for, there's deliberately unavailable films too. And there's like, but there's stuff that like, the Marx Brothers made a silent movie that was never released at all. Mm. It was only screened, I think, once or twice, and they hated it so much that it was called Humor Risk. And it was the story they always told was they hated it so much that they just destroyed it. But I always wonder if it survived somewhere. But here's what I'm going to say: all of this talk about projects that didn't get made or that didn't get finished should be taken with a grain of salt, because sometimes that project doesn't happen because it doesn't really have the strength to stay alive. And you look at something like The Other Side of the Wind, which for years it was like, we'll never see Orson Welles' final lost masterpiece. And then they tried to patch it together. And admittedly, that you know, it's a monster of a thing. It's like sewn together out of bits. But like, I was like, I can't wait to see this. And I finally started watching it. I couldn't get through like more than a few minutes of it. It was so like, and from everything that I've learned or heard about that movie, I don't think it was going to be that much better in some ways. And ironically, the part of it that ages the best is the part where he's like parodying artsy European movies. And he has those like the two characters just kind of wandering silently around a city and it's like, oh, this looks really cool. But that's not the movie he was making. So yeah. I think sometimes these movies are better off living in our imaginations, you know, in that Sandman library of all the books that were never written, you know, and things like that.
Well, let us move on to the last segment, which is to recommend movies that probably would be a better use of your time than 65. I'm going to recommend a movie I saw a little while back. It has been divisive, but I think I really enjoyed it. You know, I can see why it's not for everyone.
It Baby's called, Day Out?
It's called
Martyrs.
Beau's Afraid. The
a mix between those two things.
Most recent Ari Aster movie. A very black comedy about a man who is living in a world where seemingly every anxiety he could possibly have turns out to be true. Not in a way like, not in like a fantastical, like literal, like I'm having anxieties and they're coming true. But like that is the way to understand
like
it.
Like Evil Tunes?
It has the same sort of mother exclamation point stress dream logic, but more of a sort of deadpan comedy than Mother is.
Like Synecdoche, New York?
Yeah, I would say it has a certain quality of that. Yeah, I can see why people don't necessarily want to watch a movie that's 3 hours of sort of grueling anxiety, but with jokes.
You lost me at 3 hours.
And particularly a movie
If I'm going to watch a three-hour movie, it better be Redbeard, starring Toshirô Mifune. Thank you very much.
And I mean, particularly a movie that, like, I understand at this point some people's thirst for a movie about a white man's angst is not what they, it's not something that they have a lot of. I get it. But as an angsty white man who has a lot of anxieties, I found it cathartic to watch and funny. And yeah, I would say that the last third of it is actually kind of the weakest part, which is a problem. You know, you want to walk out of a movie on a high, but there's a lot of great stuff in it.
That's where those microdose gummies come in.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was going to watch a three-hour movie, I would watch what I'm assuming is the TV edit of Killers of the Flower Moon. yeah, I'm going to recommend a movie that a friend of the Flophouse, Jamel Bowie, described as a men in meetings movie. I'm going to recommend Air, a movie about a shoe. It's very, like, it was a little hard for me to get on board with a movie about a company succeeding, but they manage, it's...
But at least it's a company that stands for great values and treats its workers well, right?
But they managed to do a pretty interesting job of showing how the Michael Jordan, Air Jordan deal paved the way for athletes getting more of a cut of products that they are endorsing, which is really cool. Specifically the whole like college athletes thing, which is still fucking insane to me that these fucking pieces of shit are taking advantage of college athletes. It's a lot of fun performers, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, all these guys. Viola Davis gives some, you know, she puts in the work. She's incredible. It's a lot of fun. And having just seen Guardians of the Galaxy and been a little bit like, oh man, these needle drops are a little on the nose. I felt that the needle drops in Air are both kind of more on the nose, but I like them more. So I don't know. I'm a jerk. Who knows?
You're inconsistent. Look, you contain multitudes. That's the thing.
That's me. Check out Air. Why not?
I'm going to recommend also a movie, I guess, about feels a little weird in today's climate, but I'll explain why. But I enjoyed it a lot, and that's a movie called Park Row, which is a Samuel Fuller movie from 1952, starring Gene Evans, which is about the founding of a newspaper in the 1880s in New York, and this upstart newspaper that has to fight against the established newspapers. And it is super energetic. It's really fun. It's a little weird in that it's in some ways about a man who just can't do what he wants because this rich woman keeps trying to destroy him. But at the same time, the kind of newspaper that he dreams of bringing into creation and that the movie is celebrating is like a newspaper that sets up stunts and then reports on them. So it's not like the most positive thing that they do is the campaign to raise money for a pedestal for the Statue of Liberty. But other than that, he's like, yeah, let's start a fight over there. And then we'll report on the fight. So it's not like it's holding them to the highest journalistic standards. But I'm a big fan of movies where like a group of people are getting together to accomplish something. And this is all about that. The period aspect of it is really fun. It's set in the 1880s, but it's not stodgy at all. Like it's super, the characters are super alive, you know? And
so it's set in the 80s. So it's got a lot of, a lot of piano key neckties and stuff.
Yeah, I know in the 1880s. So 1880s. So there's a lot of needle drops, but the needle drops are like, I dream of Jeannie instead of with the soft brown hair and things like that, mm-hmm.
Guys playing music on what like kitchen mm-hmm. kitchen instruments.
I'm just wild about Harry.
Yeah, exactly.
And how
yeah.
Harry's also reciprocally wild.
And by the reflexive property, Harry is also wild about me. And it's just super fun. It's a Samuel Fuller movie, so it's like got a lot of brash energy and a lot of in your faceness, and I really enjoyed it a lot. So that's Park Row.
We did it, guys.
We did it.
We traveled 65 million years into the past,
Stuart.
And back again.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's amazing. It's like a fucking Simpatico. Mind link. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this too long. But if you enjoy it, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Hey, if you're so inclined, why not give us a nice review on iTunes? I say this because I subscribe to a service that gives us our rankings on iTunes, but also rounds up the reviews. So unfortunately now I'm back to seeing reviews, and we've had a few reviews that I would say were mad at us, not for the show, but for political reasons. So if you want to counteract, you know, bad trolls out there, you know, why don't you
as
drop a nice
review? As opposed to
the good
trolls who believe only in love and their long, shiny hair and introducing my children to the song Barracuda, which I appreciate, except because I love that song, but I don't like that my younger son now first says, I like that song Barracuda. It's from Trolls World Tour. And I go, no. It's not from Trolls World Tour. Mm-hmm. It's in Trolls World Tour.
So if you want to support good trolls and counteract bad trolls, maybe leave us a good word. And go over to MaximumFun.org. Check out the other great podcasts on our network. Maximum Fun is what it's called. It has fun comedy and culture podcasts. And thank you to Alex Smith, our producer. You can find him as Howell Doughty on Twitter. Someone pointed out that the fact that I said that Howell is not spelled like Howell, as in Howell's Moving Castle, was confusing because in the book, Howell's real name is Howell.
Oh,
it turns out.
That
so
is confusing.
Let's just say that it is spelled Ho Well Doughty.
Just spell it. Just say the letters. H-O-W-E-L-L.
Well, I enjoy.
Why are we dancing around architecture here? Let's just spell the name.
Take me on a trip, Dan.
Yeah. I'm driving us around the neighborhood.
Never heard of a shaggy dog spelling before.
I'm trying to put you to sleep because you've been fussy all day, Stu.
I get fucking fussy.
That's true. He does get fussy, yeah.
But thank you for listening. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Elliot Kalin. Thank you for support of us and of the writer's strike and all things good in the world, of which those are two. Well, the strike's not, you know, it's not good, but the what we're striking
about
for is good.
Taking us on a ride.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is my shaggy dog. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Waiting for the.
You've done it almost 400
times. Yeah,
no, times.
I know. I was
done,
off.
Done with my snack.
I was
station.
Thrown off by the almond squeaks. Okay.
This next hit comes from the almond squeaks, and it goes like this.
It took on. I laughed at the first part, and then I laughed when I realized there was an actual tune being done. Okay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.